This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Up to the time we're 21 years old, the mental body into the mid to late 20s, and then the spiritual body is not developed till you're about 38 to 40. And in some ancient cultures, you're not allowed to be a shaman or a spiritual teacher until you're over 40 years old, for that particular reason, that spiritual body is not finished cooking yet. Mm-hmm. And that holds the chakra system together. The chakras are like back-to-back vortexes, and they pull this information, all your input information that you get from your environment, they push and pull it up through the body. So the first thing that gets you is the concept. You get some information. It comes into the root chakra. You get a concept. And then it moves up to the belly chakra, and you get your first feeling about that. You get a gut feeling, right? It's in the belly. We call that the gut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, we pull that up to the solar plexus, and we create an opinion about it. We pull it up to the mental body. A lot of people just like to skip that feeling, and they go right to opinion. Well, the element that's associated with that concept is fire, and the element associated with opinion is air. Well, you're going to get a flare. No wonder we have war all the time. Nobody wants that first feeling of water, which is the repression of the feminine, because nobody wants to feel anything. But that's our first chance to dampen that fire, is that belly chakra, the water. But if we don't, and we flare up, and we're in the air of our opinion up there, we have another chance by opening the heart, which is the bridge to the spiritual, which is the second feeling, or the sober second thought, the senate of the body, and that element is earth. So you can take that dirt, and you can quell that fire down there. Once you've passed that heart chakra, your throat wants to have a response. Now, men have a lot of trouble there. They get indigestion a lot. Opening the heart for men is hard. But once that heart is open, women tend to, you know, have the heart open, but then they can't make a response and speak about it. So they're going to get a pain between the shoulder blades, because that vortex is pulling it out the front of the throat, whereas men can't pull it in the heart. So sometimes they get the solar plexus indigestion, heart attack, stuff like that. So the response is the throat, our responsibility, or our ability to respond. And like I said previously, the Hopi say we're moving to the fifth world, and that's represented by the throat chakra, our ability to respond. So we say no, we say yes, we respond. It's the first phase of manifestation. We're making a noise. Make a joyful noise onto the Lord. And with cymatics, we know that every sound creates a geometrical form. And everything you say is an order that you give in the holographic cafe. So that is very powerful, your voice. Now, after that, it goes up into the brow, into the third eye chakra, and you have an insight born of that concept. Wow, I learned something. And if you're able to, and you're healthy, and you're functioning, you release that out your crown chakra, and that's a processed concept. A lot of us like to hang on to that information at different points through that path, and that's what creates our dis-ease. As we hold on to those things, because that information is meant to move quickly. Once you release that through the crown, you're just like a little superconductor, a little electromagnet. It goes right back down, and it reroutes new conceptual wisdom for other people to pick up on. And that's how that 100th monkey syndrome works. That's how we're going to spread information, and that's how we're going to hold frequency, is by being honest and processing our concepts. And that's how you keep your robe clean. That's, in my opinion, from my Sunday school lessons, that's what I've come to think of it as.
Okay.
And nobody knows that. Nobody teaches you that.
Right, yeah. There's a lot of...
That's how you can take personal responsibility. Because then you have an understanding. You're standing under a process concept.
Yeah. Now, a lot of doctors, I'm not talking about the medical doctors in the hospitals in the Western world, but a lot of healers, maybe is a better word, pay close attention to the chakras.
They're all associated with glands, and the glands are what feed the hormones and keep our bodies healthy and regulated and balanced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got, the gonads down there, the Peyer's patches, the pancreas, the adrenals, coming up to the thymus, the thyroid, pituitary. Every gland is associated with these, every chakra is associated with these glands and organs. Yeah.
Okay.
All knit together. We're four different bodies all layered on top of each other. And science experiments have also found that the mind isn't in the brain. The mind is actually in your field. So this car is the body. The driver is you. It's almost like you have three other subtle bodies that are really more you than your physical body. And we never think about that.
Okay. Okay. Have you done any research into dreams?
Into dreams. Well,
yeah.
I have a dream dictionary by my bed.
Okay.
But I think dreams are very important.
Yeah.
That is your direct connection. Nobody knows anything better than you for you. You can do as much research into other people's work as you want, but really, know thyself is the basic instruction.
Yeah, well said. Absolutely.
So your dreams, for you personally, very important. Some people have prophetic dreams that affect, you know, lots of people. But anything you can do to get in touch with what you're feeling and what's going on in your own field, that's the work to do at this point. Not to look out and be manipulated by the distractions created for you by those who control the financial system or whatever.
Okay. I've often had dreams that seem to encompass ideas that I was quite sure had never crossed through my brain before. And I think that's a fascinating thing, and I like to think that humanity and maybe much more are connected in energy ways, and quite often dreams
seem
to be a form of communication.
Yes, I totally agree with you, and we are a network. And every nodal point in that network can direct the flow of information for the whole thing. We're not a hierarchy, but we've been tricked and depowered by that concept. In a network, everybody's functioning, everybody's equal.
Okay.
You know, so that's brilliant. And the dream world is just another vibration where your consciousness is. It's just as real in some regards as this world, some would say.
Yeah, possibly more.
Yeah. Woo! We're getting all woo woo.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. The Halloween sounds are coming out.
Uh huh. But there's a little equation I like to let people in on. To think about your feelings that are going on in your body. Always remember that emotion plus a thought equals a feeling. So if you change the thought or change the emotion, you're going to change the feeling. Feeling equals thought plus emotion. And your feeling leads to your intuition. So it's really important to always be honest with your emotions. Sometimes we feel if we admit that we have that pain or we have that hurt, we lose somehow. And that someone else got one over on us or something.
Mm-hmm.
When really accepting the dark and the light makes us stronger to move forward, because we're so afraid of making a mistake. And this concept of being a born sinner, some people have made whole careers on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got that right. What is your latest passion? What is the new something new that you've learned and you want to learn more about right now?
Well, I'm reading a book right now. It's kind of interesting. It's called Flying Serpents and Dragons, The Story of Mankind's Reptilian Past by R.A. Boulay. And it's based on Zachariah Sitchin's work and von Daniken's work and another guy. And I'm really starting to wonder if it's not true that we were created by another species that we were never allowed to depict as a worker. And this old book called the Haggadah, an ancient text, said that the original Adam and Eve actually had these horny, luminescent skins on them. And what they're suggesting in this book is that if our species that went more mammalian was going to live on this planet and be able to procreate, they had to tinker the genes to be less reptilian and more on the outside overtly mammalian.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow, I just think, wow, if people ever, if that's true, mm-hmm. and we were just this little species that was created somehow to work for somebody else, number one, that wasn't very nice, you know, to tinker with a little monkey like that. And number two, what would people think of themselves? How would they go and worship these beasts again, you know? Because in the Bible, they're always giving burnt offerings to God. Well, what if God was a big, scary reptilian? Wouldn't he like a burnt goat?
Hmm.
That's the thing that's getting me. Very interesting ancient documents talking about, you know, even the Chinese emperors relate their DNA back to serpent kings.
Mm.
And in Africa, the same thing, back to serpent kings.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering, that would be very interesting. And maybe it's time that we grow up. Maybe they kind of feel bad they made us and wish we'd just hurry up and quit killing each other and join the galactic community, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw a great movie last year? Alfred Weber gave a lecture prior to a movie on crop circles. And darn it, from what I understand, there's two real standout productions on crop circles, and I can't remember the one that I have right now. But very telling, and the images, you know, from the aerial views are absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah.
And to think that, you know, a couple people did this in the middle of the night, you know, without leaving a trace, and plus to leave some real funky energy behind, I can't buy it. You know,
it's really astounding.
Yeah, you didn't talk about the hoaxers at all.
Well, they're out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're out there. I mean, I don't know what to say about them. If there's no plant changes, you have to really wonder, because they're clever. You have to have the plant changes, because again, there's a microwave type energy that sort of heats the water in the plant and it makes a steam, and then the nodal bends in the plant is where the steam will escape at that weakest point, and that's how the plants are able to be bent into these spiraling shapes. Those physical changes in the plants aren't there in a hoaxed formation.
Okay.
Also, the seeds are changed.
Mm-hmm.
The seeds become super seeds if it's a mature crop.
Yeah.
They grow synchronistically. That means at the same time with less water, less light. That's a big message. Some farmers actually do know about electricity doing something to the seeds, making them more of them germinate. But I think that's probably an ancient technology, and it could be just a byproduct of the technology used to imprint the formations. I'm not sure,
mm-hmm.
but they have found that it does affect the seed growth in a positive way,
yeah.
if it's a mature crop.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, and of course the cymatic connection, because sound creates form. Dr. Hans Jenny did experiments on that, and because we can only hear, you know, a certain frequency, people have reported a trilling sound. But the fact itself that sound does create physical changes in liquid and sand, there's the theory that these things are created by a sound frequency as well.
Hmm, interesting. Now, there's been some crop formations in B.C. as well.
Yeah.
It seems that we might be becoming a bit of a hot spot over in this area.
Yeah, you guys had a couple there. Where was that now? Duncan?
In Duncan, which
Clomacan,
is really close to where I'm at right now.
Yeah. There was some in grass there. They were beautiful. There's pictures at the cccrn.ca of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there were some very interesting ones. One didn't look too good, but that circular one in grass was really amazing, especially the close-ups of the grass when you actually look and go, wow, you know,
mm-hmm.
how did that grass get like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just still, it still boggles my mind.
Hmm. It's getting to the time that we're going to be wrapping this up, Beata.
Yeah, it's time for me to go to bed. I'm way in the middle of the night out here in Canada.
Well, I sure appreciate you staying up past your bedtime.
Thank you.
And you can have milk and cookies afterwards.
If
you have enough time. So why don't we connect with some perhaps websites that you would like to give, maybe if how people can see some of your... Well, certainly the tinfoil hat lady pieces.
Yeah, my YouTube stuff is always available at youtube.com/tinfoilhatlady.
Okay.
And the cccrn.ca.
And what does that stand for again?
Canadian Crop Circle Research Network.
Thank you.
CropCircleConnector.com. I sent you most of these in an email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm actually, if I can get you to do that again, and I will again post these on my website.
The Mayan portal, the Mayan calendar interactive portal is fantastic. People can look up their birth signs there.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
It's really fun because the Mayan had a concept that whatever energy on the day you were born told you what your life was supposed to be about.
Hmm.
So that's quite exciting.
Wow.
Diagnosis2012.co.uk, Jeff Stray's site, he's into the 2012 stuff. Also, Dr. Emoto's work with the water crystals and labeling water and the intention of the words changing how the crystals form in the water.
That's right. Yeah.
Very cool. People can do that with rice. I love you and you fool. Two jars of white rice and say that to each of them and see what happens in 30 days. Also, cymatics.org, cymatics.org, where that sound creates form science is found. And BLTResearch.com is from the Crop Circle Science. If who was ever interested in some of the hardcore science that they've done, BLTResearch.com and
okay.
Nancy Talbot. Yeah, and Kalleman.com, Dr. Johann Kalleman, Kalleman.com.
Okay, well, fantastic. That's a lot of information,
yeah.
And thank you for that, and thank you for taking the time and being the inquisitive person that you are to put that together and talk on shows like mine.
No problem. Thank you for having a show like yours.
Well, thanks, Beata, and I wish you the best, and let's plan for you to come on again in the near future.
All right. You have a good night.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, so that was Beata Van Berkom of Saskatchewan, Canada, talking about, well, crop circles and some other things, chakras there. So I felt a little bit out of my regular comfort zone. I'm used to primarily talking about, well, political issues that are more obviously political. But I really enjoyed that piece, and thank you, Beata, for making that possible. So let's move on. I've got some things I have to do. First off, I guess will be the Kappus Community Update. Let's get my song on for that. Okay, very nice. I'm going to let John Lennon serenade you for a little bit longer, and I'll be back shortly. Soldier either, and I don't want to die, especially not by being a soldier. So there we are. There's the Kappus Community Update. I'm going to put on an audio piece now, and I went a little bit over on the interview with Beata Van Berkom. I'm not too sure what I'm going to conclude the show with. I'm going to need to do a little shifting around here, so I'll figure out what's going on as you're listening to this audio piece. And this is on following the money trail during a financial meltdown. Thank you, John. This is a look at tax havens, the hidden hand in the financial crisis. This comes to us from America News Project. And again, a look at how offshore financing helped to enable the current economic meltdown. This is brought to us by Lagan Siebert. And again, Terry in Nanaimo pointed this clip out to me. So here we are, another key to the puzzle of this, what I believe is a manufactured financial meltdown to, again, consolidate power and other things that are not very nice. So give that a listen, and I'll be back with, well, more than likely we're going to hear from, son of a gun, the time's going to be a little bit tight. I want to play the Alex Jones piece, looking at the new president, Barack. That's an 11-minute piece. And I've got the George Bush farewell speech as well. And I was going to give some commentary on that as we go. That was going to be a longer piece. So I'm not too sure what we're going to fit in the next 35 minutes, but I'll have that figured out when you come back. So you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. This is the Unbought and Unbossed Show. See you shortly.
When it comes to the financial meltdown, there's one question that seems to baffle just about everyone. Why didn't we see it coming? How is it possible that billions in bad investments were hidden from public view for so long? Part of the answer, according to experts, lies offshore, in the world's tax havens. Beautiful Caribbean islands, and elegant European mountain nations, where financiers can hide their investments from tax collectors and regulators.
without tax havens, without the ability to set up disguised corporations, without the ability of hedge funds to operate offshore, this crisis would have been far less.
Offshore accounts are currently attracting the attention of prosecutors in the Bernie Madoff scandal. Investigators suspect Madoff used tax havens to keep his regulators and his clients in the dark. And like Madoff, many of the biggest financial institutions at the center of the current crisis have a history of hiding money in tax havens, including Morgan Stanley, Citigroup, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, and Lehman Brothers. How much they keep in tax havens? No one knows.
This is a huge structure that is designed to disguise financial flows and asset accumulations.
Raymond Baker investigates the illegal flows of money around the world. In his book, Capitalism's Achilles Heel, he estimates Western banks and businesses hide some $1 trillion each year in tax havens.
A lot of the bad subprime mortgage paper ended up in tax havens. So the person in Cleveland or Detroit or elsewhere in the United States that is losing their house doesn't need to be aware of the mechanisms that brought about that. But that is reality, that that the ability to slice and dice those packages that contain that bad paper and then squirrel it away in non-transparent entities contributed to this problem.
Jack Blum has investigated financial crime for the federal government for more than 30 years. He agrees with Baker that banks hide troubled assets offshore to keep them under the radar of regulators.
If a bank, for example, has done bad lending and they put it in the portfolio of an offshore entity, no one will be able to figure out what that offshore entity is really worth. And it's that kind of transaction that has absolutely disabled the world financial system.
Blum says it was that uncertainty that eventually made banks afraid to lend to each other.
When this meltdown came, no bank would trust any other bank in the overnight lending market. So you got to a situation where the market froze, and everybody who needs credit is absolutely up the creek.
So why didn't the banks trust each other?
Because nobody could figure out what anybody else had. And each major bank knew that other guys had bad stuff because they had bad stuff. And they had bad stuff hidden in the offshore world.
It's kind of like that scene in the movie Reservoir Dogs. When in the end, the band of crooks realize they're all too dirty to be trusted. One of the best at hiding money offshore is the same corporation that's received the most bailout money, Citigroup. And their use of tax havens has got them in trouble before. In 2003, Citigroup paid a huge settlement for helping Enron mislead investors by stashing bad investments offshore. And Jack Blum says bad investments hidden in offshore accounts are at the center of Citigroup's own current collapse.
Their balance sheet was showing these huge assets consisting of investments in offshore entities. The problem was the investments were worthless. How do you write that off and not collapse the bank? Well, that's why they came for a bailout.
In fact, taxpayers have bailed out Citigroup twice since October. They got $25 billion from the Treasury in the first round of the bailout. Just a month later, they came back for another $20 billion. And on top of the money from the bailout fund, Citigroup also struck a deal with the Federal Reserve to cover more than $300 billion in losses with taxpayer money. In total, the government could be handing over as much as $345 billion to Citigroup. And there's no telling if even that will be enough. At this point, do you think the government knows how much debt these banks really have?
I think that's the heart of the current problem. I think every bank at this point should be forced to come absolutely clean about how much money it has in these offshore shells of different kinds and how many deals there are hidden in the balance sheet and on the books. what's happened is it's a case of the government is running a fire department. They're running out with a truck to put water on the fire without asking any questions about what started the fire, or by putting water on it, are we really going to keep the fire down and solve the problem? And the answer, of course, is until they deal with this offshore mess, they're not going to solve the problem.
So, there we go. That is the weather update, and it is brought to you by three fantastic truth groups in Canada. Firstly, Victoria 9/11 Truth, then there's Edmonton 9/11 Truth, and of course, Fraser Valley 9/11 Truth. They have all made the big contribution, the business memberships money, and you know, there's another fund, or I'm not too sure if it's a fund drive or a membership drive, coming up in a couple months. And once again, I'm going to attempt to make this the Unbought and Unbossed show the largest bringer in of funds to CHLY. I'm a huge fan of independent media, and I think I understand and I think I understand why. And I would like to think my listeners do as well, that they recognize that what they see on TV and in their newspapers does not reflect what's going on in reality. So I'm just giving you a little heads up there, but I do want to show everyone in Nanaimo that you know, a 9/11 truth-based show is going to challenge the other popular shows on the station to be the top money bringer inner. And I've been, well, maybe in the top three, top five, the last two drives, I think. I'm not too sure. But I've had a lot of support. And again, thanks to the three big groups in Victoria, Edmonton, and Fraser Valley. Very nice. So, you know, I got a phone call. And darn it, I don't know what I'm going to be playing for you guys. 25 minutes. Son of a gun. You know, Bush, you... maybe I'll just highlight some of the things that old W had to say. And it was, you know, a lot of frustrating things. First off, he did acknowledge that his presidency is 9/11 is the defining moment, you know, of course, as you would expect. He also stated what has changed due to 9/11, and he says, I'm quoting now, well, over the past 7 years, a new Department of Homeland Security has been created. The military, the intelligence community, and the FBI have been transformed. You bet they have. Our nation has is equipped with new tools to monitor the terrorists, but of course, think citizens. So new tools to monitor the citizens' movements, to freeze their finances, and to break up their plots, I guess, of having a good life. Then, of course, he talked about what a success Afghanistan has been, you know, fending off the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, you know, which were CIA-created, so that's rather convenient. And then, of course, he goes on to say that, you know, we've protected you for 7 years. There hasn't been another 9/11. Well, no shit. That's because you only needed one. You know, the people are so dumbed down due to corporate media that you only had to do it once. But he goes on to say that that is the largest threat that we have. So the fear-mongering is still, you know, 100%. He believes that that is that's going to happen, you know, and we've got to stop it. Here's some one of those things that is just so hard to believe. He says that America is promoting human liberty, human rights, and human dignity. So that's really what the American military is doing to the world right now. Silly me, I had it all wrong. He also says something in the same paragraph that says, and this great republic born alone in liberty is leading the world towards not a new world order, but a new age when freedom belongs to all nations. So he didn't repeat his father's words to call for a new world order, but he does say that we are leading towards a new age. Let's see, he praised the faith-based programs. You know, and I kind of thought that America was about the separation of church and state, but not anymore, not anymore. He also, this is a doozy here, he says that America's air, water, and lands are measurably cleaner. I didn't know that. So everything is looking up, I guess. You know, and of course his environmental record is the absolute opposite. You know, he lowered standards every single step of the way. Let's see, he also talked about the economy. Let's see. All right, nothing too important there. But okay, this is an important thing, actually. He does acknowledge that he may have made mistakes. The way he phrases it is, I have experienced setbacks. There are things I would do differently if given the chance. So that's pretty close to acknowledging that, he may have made a mistake or two along the way. And then he follows that up by saying, you may not agree with some of the tough decisions I have made, but I hope you can agree that I was willing to make tough decisions. I haven't studied a whole lot of philosophy, but I'm pretty sure that that is not a legitimate explanation to anything. I made tough decisions, and, well, you have to agree that I made tough decisions. So therefore what? We're going to let you off the hook? Well, most of us are willing to let that happen, but, okay, so he's talking about, again, threats from abroad, and that is why we have to, we're not supposed to retreat behind our borders, because that would only invite danger, which is interesting. You know, I think it would be the opposite. You know, you invade other countries, there's bound to be a blowback of some kind, but not in Bush world. And he also says that in the 21st century, security and prosperity, yes, security and prosperity, we know that phrase, at home depend on the expansion of liberty abroad. So, you know, that means that America is going to continue to export its brand of liberty, which means killing you, taking your resources and killing you. It's really hard to believe that George Bush would say these things, you know, because they're so opposite of the truth. And the thing that's really boggling for me is that the media is going to repeat them as if they could be true, and they're not. They're the furthest thing from the truth, and it's just so, you know, it's this document I have in my hand, his speech, is the creation of this faux reality that is being, thrown at you constantly in your television and newspaper. And this is, he says, Bush, murdering the innocent to advance an ideology is wrong every time, everywhere. Yeah, that's really something, George. And, thank goodness you're not going to be heard from again. You are not an intelligent enough person to be asked to comment on future political things. You know, just like Reagan, no one ever asked Reagan his opinion. I mean, well, mind you, his mental faculties were failing him, but this Obama, that's where we're going to go now. Sure, the guy can speak good, and it's not so much that I don't trust him, it's more that I don't trust who the elites are going to place, you know, the military, industrial, congressional, media, medical, pharmaceutical, that whole complex. I don't trust who they're going to put in as president. And they have a black guy in there now that keeps talking about change, and I have a feeling that the only change you're going to see is that his skin is a little bit darker. And he's really going to have to do some big things, changing most of the things that President Bush did, certainly to the Constitution. That is going to have to be first and foremost, getting his troops out of we've got – the states have military bases and well over 100 nations. it's going to have to end. You know, that's the change that the people want, and that's not what we're going to get. And, well, one of the more informed people on this subject is Alex Jones, the radio host and movie producer. He was interviewed this morning on a television show, a TV news show, discussing the new president. So that's what we're going to listen to. And boy, does he ever cram a lot of information into it is a longer piece. It's 11 minutes long. And Alex Jones just is all over the place. He's throwing in information from left, right, and center, and the poor interviewer is doing a really good job. I don't know if she knew who Alex Jones was or not, but she came back with, she wasn't, you know, debating any of the things Jones was saying, but, you know, she was attempting to steer the conversation, which is pretty good, you know, when you're up against Alex Jones. That guy likes to talk, and this is a good example of it. There is some slightly annoying background sounds on this recording. So let's get into that. This is, new President Obama, you're going to have to prove your stuff, and myself and Alex Jones and an awful lot of people in the independent media world are going to be keeping a very, very close eye on you. And, you know, after Bush, you're going to have to earn everything you have, buddy, and I really hope that... this little Obama fanfare ends quickly. That is not healthy to, you know, throw a politician up, as if he's something greater, you know, that he, you can't pin your hope on him, you know. You're going to be disappointed every single time. That's the way it works. Anyways, okay, let's listen to Alex Jones, and there's probably going to be time. I'll come back and say goodbye to you after that. So, be well, everyone. I'll see you in 11 minutes.
Well, to comment on this historic moment in American history, we're now joined live on the phone by radio host Alex Jones. Hello to you, Alex Jones. Obama's pre-election campaign was focused on getting the U.S. out of the crisis, but this inauguration is the most expensive in the country's history in a time of financial crisis. Is spending so much money on an inauguration appropriate?
Look, the Anglo-American establishment is bragging in Newsweek magazine, the Financial Times of London. Henry Kissinger has said on CNBC television that they have orchestrated the financial crisis. The oligarchs of England and the United States are engineering this entire thing, so they could care less about $150 million for inauguration, a few hundred million more for 47,000 armed, regular army troops and police on the streets turning America into an open police state. $150 million for his parties and his inauguration is nothing compared to the overall program that they're carrying out. Obama is betraying everyone. In U.S. history, we have never worshipped the leader as God, but our corporate media is saying this guy is basically God. They are trying to get the public behind all these unpopular things like $8.5 trillion stolen by the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve out of the U.S. Treasury in the last 3 months, along with the banker takeover bills. Even Bloomberg News admits War Powers Act has been declared. Congress has been threatened with physical martial law if they don't go along with this. Bush has passed the baton to Barack Obama. He's going to try to get international support to encircle Russia further, to move weapon systems into Russia, to escalate tensions with Iran. Barack Obama, if people didn't like George Bush, they're going to hate Barack Obama. This guy is a corporate creation of the banking elite in this country. And so, of course, while people are losing their jobs and many economists, including Economist Magazine, are saying we're going into a depression, of course he's partying like it's 1999. Of course he's having a great time. Of course he's arrogantly up there making Benito Mussolini faces and, you know, holding his head high with his chin up in the air. They want this guy to act like a messianic savior, and it's not going to work. They're setting up youth brigades, the compulsory national service in the United States. They're organizing like Mao Zedong did, a separate group outside government at USAservice.org, where people will openly serve him, just like Mao's Youth Corps. You cannot make this type of stuff up. The world needs to dread Barack Hussein Obama.
Okay, well, let's talk about the economic problems. The Democrats are known as a party which is good at solving economic problems. In your opinion, is the new president, does he have the experience to cope with the current economic problems?
Well, I mean, he works for the elite that engineered it. His new Treasury Secretary, Geithner, doesn't even pay income taxes like the rest of the public do. 65% of our Congress doesn't pay income taxes. They are above the law. They have exempted themselves from all the laws we have to follow. So people say, does he have the experience to save us? He doesn't want to save us. He doesn't want to help us. Did the oligarchs in your country in the mid-1990s want to save you? No, they wanted to blow the economy out with IMF World Bank shock therapy. They're going to do that here so they can devalue everything down to almost nothing so they can buy it up for pennies on the dollar. The Trilateral Commission, the CFR, they are all openly in publications admitting all of this to the public. So that's what's so incredibly outrageous. So no, Obama doesn't have what it takes to fix this, because that's not his aim. That's not his goal. His goal is to sucker the public, to con them, to make them love him, and then betray them so they can get their agenda through. They are openly announcing in Newsweek magazine.
Let's talk about his approval rating then. He enjoys an unprecedented approval rating, as we know, 82%, I believe. And how will people react if change doesn't happen soon? Is this high support a short-lived thing, would you say?
Yes. Obama and his Vice President Biden and all the major analysts say he has 150 to 200 days, while the public is still somewhat suckered by him and this mass media hoax that he's actually a good guy, when his open agenda is the opposite of what this country needs. And so the people are going to become disillusioned very, very quickly. The cold corporate media here is hyping the fact that he's really got a 65% approval rating. It's really not that high. We've been talking to people on the ground in D.C. on my own radio show today, and they are saying, yeah, he is betraying us on warrantless wiretapping. He is betraying us, saying the troops are going to stay in Iraq. He is betraying us with his banker bailout. And so they're already becoming apprehensive, but the media in unison, this never happened in the U.S.
Well, why is it
totally behind
him? You make it sound like it's a conspiracy. Why would you say that the media is doing this? Why this big hoax that you're discussing, you're telling me about?
The mainline corporate media is owned by the military-industrial complex and the private bank. And they want to take over the United States. They want to destroy the economy. They've stated this in their scholarly papers, not on the public nightly news, so they can consolidate. This is a conspiracy, but it is a open conspiracy, just like what the oligarchs did in Russia. It is the same group. It is the same crew out of England that are orchestrating this. That's why they are trying to cause a new Cold War with Russia, because they're angry that your government and your people kicked the oligarchs out. We have the same group of oligarchs in the United States that are doing this. So the media is all getting behind Barack Obama to whip up support so they can sell the public on going along with the wider agenda. They need that mass support so that the people, look, everything he's doing, he wants amnesty for illegal aliens, open borders. 91% Gallup polls are against that.
Well,
he wants new banker takeover.
Well, let's talk.
That's unpopular.
Do you think, then, in the light of what you've been saying, that the American political spectrum is likely to change under the new president now that the Republican era is over? Is this an age of liberalism?
No, it's a false left cover. Just as Hitler, at first claimed he was a socialist and used left cover, he was really a fascist. Same thing with Benito Mussolini. We've seen this over and over again. We're going to see better rhetoric. We're going to see a slicker speaker with more deceptive tone, reaching out to the world, but in words only. The deeds are all the same. Everything Obama said he would do a year ago, he has now reversed. Promised to reverse the undue powers given to the presidency, the dictatorial powers, under the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, PDD 51. He's now said with Stephanopoulos last week on national television that he agrees with Cheney that he's going to probably keep all those new undue powers that the presidency has taken on. So what's happening is the military-industrial complex owns both parties in this country. They brought George Bush in after Clinton to fool conservatives thinking things would change. George Bush tripled the size of government, put military on the streets of America, and now Barack Obama is expanding all of that because Barack Obama is a complete and total puppet of the elite. We haven't had a real president in the United States since they killed John F. Kennedy in 1963. And he warned Russia's own foreign minister that the military was considering staging a coup against him during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and that's why Russia went ahead and went for détente, because Kennedy reached out and said, listen, you understand they want to have a war. They want to stage terror attacks, Operation Northwood. So I believe that we're going to see an acceleration of what we had under Bush, but because he has a new face, because he's the first black president, people think that's changed, but that's only change on the surface. And look at who he's packing his cabinet with. General Jim Jones, Secretary of Defense Gates. They are bringing in all of these people who were in the Bush administration or the worst characters from the Clinton administration, and all these former IMF and World Bank heads and international bankers who are part of the banking oligarchy that has engineered the collapse that we're now under. The United States is being brought down by criminal oligarchs and is being looted by design. It's Obama's job to sit there and fool the public to go along with it. But then when you read the Army War College, they openly say that within a year to 2 years, there will be open rebellion and insurrection in the streets. They admit they're going to use all the new anti-terror powers they claim were for Al-Qaeda against the American people. So
we talk about torture here. Obama spoke out against torture. Will his presidency be more transparent in terms of how he approaches human rights issues such as Guantanamo in the light of what you've been saying? Okay, no.
No. What he's going to do is they'll have better rhetoric. He's saying he's going to close Guantanamo, he says, within 6 months to a year. Okay? He's saying he will close it, but ABC News reported a week ago, what we already knew, they have built 14 secret, and that's the headline, secret Guantanamos inside the United States. Before, they did it outside the country. Now they've built 14 bridges, South Carolina, Texas, California. These will be totally secret, and they've just renamed harsh interrogation away from torture, and they are going to continue the torture, not to mention an unknown number of black ops sites, those sites where they torture people, in Georgia, the U.S. takes them there, in Ukraine, in Poland, in Egypt, and in Jordan, and those are just in Romania. These are the real torture camps. Guantanamo was just a public camp to condition the public of the United States to accept this. Now, Houston Chronicles reported they have built four 1-million-man camps for the American people for daring insurrection. So no, you're going to see the huge apparatus for, quote, fighting Al-Qaeda swung around domestically, focused in against the American people.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Jones. You're obviously not going to see change. You don't see Obama as changing things the way everybody else is seeing him as a person for change. Alex Jones, radio host, live on the telephone from USA. Thank you so much for your views.
Okay, that was, Alex Jones talking about the new president, Obama. Boy, oh boy, I would like to wish good things, and, well, we'll find out, won't we? So I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in tonight to the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. Thanks again to Beata Van Berkum from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, staying up late to chat with me about crop circles and other related topics. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did, too. And, of course, we took a look at saying goodbye to George W., and then saying hello to Obama. So I'm going to leave you now with a song. Okay, what is it? Sitting on Top of the World. This is by Jack White from the Cold Mountain soundtrack. We'll see you next week, friends.
just trying to find my little Lenore. But now she's gone, and I don't worry. Lord, I'm sitting on top of the world. Was it the spring, one summer day, just when she left me? She's gonna stay, but now she's gone, and I don't worry. Oh, I'm sitting on top of the world. And you come running, holding up your hand. Can't give me a woman quick as you can get a man. And now you're gone, and I don't worry. Lord, I'm sitting on top of the world. Down in the yard, go get me a freight train.